This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. In the summer of 2007, the man who had been serving as interim chancellor at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale arrived in Kalamazoo to become Western Michigan University's new president. 10 years, a new medical school, an affiliation with the Thomas M. Cooley Law School, several other big changes, and countless puns with his last name, John Dunn's tenure as Western's president is almost done. He will retire at the end of July. Thank you very much for being here.
Gordon, thank you very much. It's nice to be with you and your many, many listeners and also our other guests here.
Natasha Blakely, a reporter from the Kalamazoo Gazette, also joining us. Thank you for being here. So let's begin with a more pressing matter than the past 10 years, and that is the university still has to approve a budget, has to approve a tuition for next year. That is due at the end of the month. Do you know much right now about what sort of proposal will be before the trustees?
Obviously, we've been working very, very hard on the budget. We have more clarity now out of Lansing because of the actions of the House and the Senate and also the governor. So we're getting closer to knowing what we need to do and the adjustments we need to make. I do find it kind of ironic because one of the first things I had to work on when I arrived here in July of 2007 was to finalize a budget for that particular year. So on my way out, I have the same responsibility to try and get this in place to make sure it's as good a shape as it can be for our new President Montgomery. And that's the goal, and that's what we're working on right now.
Natasha?
So have you seen the last few projects or weeks that you've had turn out the way you hoped?
Oh, very definitely. As you both know, and many, many other people, our campus right now, we have a number of major projects going on, bringing down McCracken, part of McCracken. That's going very, very well. We also have a wayfinding project going on, new signage on the university campus. So we look a little torn up and a little scarred, but that was all planned, and we're on time, and the group, our facilities people, are moving forward very nicely.
So after this, you're going to be president emeritus. Yeah. What do you hope to do position to ease your transition?
Well, next year, the trustees have asked me to focus on a few things. One is, of course, making sure that I can provide as much support or assistance to our new president as possible. At the same time, my caveat is I want to be helpful to President Montgomery, but I don't want to be in the way. I want to make sure that he has the help that he needs, recognizing he's very bright, he's very talented, great selection, and he does not need a shadow. He needs maybe a little background on a few issues that I can help him with, but he will be our president, and the decisions that he makes will be the decisions that he needs to make. And even if some of those might be contrary to my own personal thinking or even an action we might have taken in earlier time, we want to respect that, honor that, and acknowledge that he's the president, and that's the way it should be. I'll also do some international work, both in terms of solidifying some agreements with partners that we have around the world, as well as helping to recruit international students to advance our global presence, which is very, very important to the university. And, you know, fundraising and philanthropy, I think there are some things that we can do there that will help close some understandings and bring in some resources for our students and the university as a whole. So I'm anxious about that and looking forward to doing that and being helpful. Dr. Montgomery has asked me if I would continue to work on, among other things, the relationships and the solidification of our agreement with Cooley, the law school, and I'm happy to do that.
In terms of a transition, does the transition that you went through when Dieter Hennecke was had served as interim president at that time, but had obviously had a longer tenure before that. He was still here in the community, and you two talked, I think, fairly mm-hmm. often. Is that the model that you're trying to follow? Did he give you the sort of blueprint that you're trying to now emulate as departing president and then president emeritus for the next year or so?
Yeah, Dieter and Carol Hennecke were very, very helpful to the Dunns as we made the transition to Western Michigan University. And Dieter would be a good model to emulate in that I never felt that he was breathing down my neck. I felt that he was there if I wanted to pick the phone up, ask him a question, help me understand this, or what's the history of a particular proposal and how did we get where we are. We didn't agree on everything, but we respected one another, and you can't ask for much more than that. And it was open and very transparent conversations. And to my knowledge, Dieter was not, as I hope that I can emulate same, not engaged in conversations downtown that said, you know, oh my goodness, where is the guy going now, or isn't it awful, and all that stuff. You know, we just don't have time for that. Civility, respect, and courtesy is critical to the continuing success of our university.
Natasha?
Other than in your role as president emeritus, what are you going to be doing with your time once you stop being president?
Well, next year, again, I think I'm going to be pretty busy, and so I anticipate... I've already been asked by some organizations to stay connected with some board activity and those kinds of things. Also, I've got a few that have asked me if I would mind meeting with their group to give a presentation, a speech, a talk, anything I can do in the community to be helpful, whether that's with our outstanding local public school or Maryland Schlack at Kalamazoo Valley Community College, our new president, who I think is just great at Kalamazoo College, Jorge. Whatever I can do to facilitate and help and support others. And some people have asked me if I wouldn't mind being a little bit of a mentor to share some experiences that I've gone through and let others learn from the mistakes made or maybe a few successes. So I think I'll be very active and very busy. And in addition to that, I hope to stay healthy. And, you know, I'm a faithful, I work out every morning, and I don't plan to change that at all. So
I want to back up here 10 years, maybe a little even before that. When you were at Southern Illinois, what made you interested in the idea that you might go to Kalamazoo and become the president of Western Michigan University?
Yeah, I was very, very fortunate. My career... being first and foremost a happy faculty member and doing a lot of scholarly work, grants, contracts, those kinds of things, putting programs together, which I enjoyed very much. And then I was department chair, eventually an assistant dean in a college. This is all at Oregon State. And while at Oregon State, the associate provost, we were pretty lean, thin administrative structure. So it was a good role, and it was a critical role. And then being a dean at the University of Utah, and then that led me, after 7 years, to Southern Illinois University, Carbondale. I went there to be the provost and vice chancellor, the second person in the university structure. The chancellor was relieved of his duties, and I was asked to be the interim. When I accepted that responsibility, I did that with the caveat that I would not be a candidate for the chancellorship there, and also recognizing that it was highly probable that the new chancellor might want to have a different provost. You never know, right? So it allowed me then to be very open and free with my interest. Being a president was on my radar. I knew of Western Michigan University, primarily its academic programs and selected fields that are close and near to me. But then when I visited here and saw Kalamazoo, I said, wow, this is a great place and the place to be. And my only regret is that while it's been a super 10 years for the Dunns, I think if we could have gotten here 5 years earlier, it'd been even better, right? And it's just a great place to be.
You started off with a five-year agreement with the Board of Trustees. Did you foresee 10 years at the time? Did you think, I'm gonna get beyond five, and I'd like to get five more beyond that?
No, I was doing the math. I came here, I was 61. I'm 5 years, I'm gonna be 66. And, 5 years is a pretty good tenure for any president today. And then the trustees asked me if I would consider a couple more years, and then they asked me again a couple more years, and they asked me again if I would add another year. And that got me to 10. I have no regrets about doing that at all. And but at the same time, you know, chronologic age being what it is, I'm healthy, I feel good. I still have a lot of energy, but at the same time, you don't want to ever overstay what you think your energy level is, or your talent, or what you can contribute. And, you know, I feel pretty good about that and that decision. I'm going to miss this place greatly, though, and I'm going to miss being with the students on the campus on a daily basis. There's no question about that.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We are speaking with Western Michigan University President John Dunn. He will retire after 10 years at the university at the end of July. We're also joined by Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Natasha Blakely. Natasha.
One thing that has been, I wouldn't say like a big problem, but a bit of something to note is that WMU's enrollment has dropped a little bit over the years. What do you think WMU needs to do to attract more students and make sure that enrollment increases instead of decreases in the coming years?
Yeah, the early years of the Dunn presidency, we actually increased enrollment. I felt very, very good about that. And then we hit coming out of 2008, 2009, things started to become more and more challenging for us financially in the state, as well as locally and certainly within our community and our region. And it is true, you're correct, that our enrollment has declined. And fortunately, though, we've had increases in enrollment, and those have been among populations that we specifically needed to assist us mitigate what that downturn would be. And the international enrollment went from about 900 to a little north of 1,800 today. So we did have an action there and a plan, and it worked quite well. Most recently, we have made a substantive change in our non-resident rate, changing that in terms of making our tuition for non-residents more attractive. That already is starting to see some really nice benefits as we look at next year. I think our entering freshman class could be a very healthy number for us, better than we've seen in the last few years. We also need to recognize, however, that we have an out-migration state. We're a declining population in our state, and we have a declining number of high school graduates in the state of Michigan, and which is not unlike some of our neighboring states. So we're all really having to work hard and to think a little bit differently about what enrollment is going to look like. The international now is being threatened a little bit by some of the action at the federal level. We're trying to fight through that. We've got people now in various parts of the world. And last night on a phone conversation, a pretty good breakthrough in a part of the world, another 25 to 30 students that we'll attract from another part of the world. We're pleased about that. I'm headed to Malaysia and China in July. To solidify, again, some relationships that will really provide good student populations for us as we move forward.
When you set out here as president of Western Michigan University, you very specifically said, I'm not going to lay out, A, B, and C that we're going to do. As you said, you were the newest employee here, so you had to do some listening. And yet, pretty early on, you started setting the course for the opening of the medical school. Can you kind of take us through the decision process of going from I'm going to listen, I'm going to see what we're doing to, okay, a medical school is the way to go?
Yeah, my initial message to the university community is that when I arrived, this is a great university, and it is a great university, and that for anyone brand new to come in and say that they've got a better vision than all of those who are currently here or those who have gone before us, I think in many ways that can be quite insulting, and I chose not to do that. I wanted to get a better feel for the university. I also wanted to help people understand that it seemed to me that if we were lacking something, it was in what I would call the pride quotient, that we weren't braggadocious enough. You know, we didn't get out there and say, you know, by golly, we can compete with anybody. I don't care who it is. We're going after it. We're an aspirational university. We're not going to hesitate. The medical school discussion, as you know, we were very fortunate, and I think it's important that people understand this. We had provided graduate medical education in this community for many, many years. through another relationship at that time with Michigan State University that had been successful. So in many ways, the third and fourth year were being provided already in our community. We had two great hospitals, Bronson and Borges, who were heavily invested in that. What we were missing was the first 2 years, and then also trying to lift the whole enterprise to be, in fact, even more competitive when we talk about residents and the quality of the residents and where they come from and all those kinds of things. So fortunately, we also had another thing happen in the year 2010. The American Medical Association, in consultation with Carnegie Foundation, revised after 100 years the guidelines for medical education. And one thing it was very clear is that the idea of 2 years of science, heavy science, and then 2 years sending students, as we were doing here somewhere else, as from Michigan State to Kalamazoo, that model was not necessarily the most sustainable nor necessarily the best model. That good medical students need great science in year four, last day out, as well as they need to have action and opportunity to be with patients year one, day one, and we're doing that in a medical school. So there was kind of a rethinking of medical education, and we just hit that right on. I mean, just right on. So there were a number of forces that were coming together, and then, of course, a marvelous gift that really solidified, hey, this is real. We can do it. We're going to do it. And then also being able to locate downtown. I'm very proud of the fact, very appreciative of the gift from MPI and the Parfit family. That made a major difference. And by being downtown, it provided a benefit and a bonus for the community at large. We've got more life downtown. The lighting is better. Safety is better. Now are places that you can frequent to have a meal, to buy your shoes, to do the things that we want our businesses downtown to be successful as well.
In the article that was in the Western Michigan University magazine about your tenure, Trustee Ken Miller noted that your legacy is going to mean different things to different people. For probably the med school will be the first thing that people talk about when they talk about John Dunn's time, but there's the affiliation with the Thomas M. Cooley Law School. There's all sorts of other programs. Do you take that as something to be proud of, that there's a lot of different things that people are going to point to as John Dunn did that? That's part of his legacy.
Yeah, and I'm very, very proud of, we've set the national standard for how we believe that our foster youth should be treated, and to have an opportunity to come to a university and benefit society as a whole. Not only them, but it's for society.
The CETA Scholars Program.
Yeah, the CETA Scholars Program. And, if you think of the alternative, young people that really want to continue their education but did not have the resources to do so, did not have the resources to find a good place to live or food on the table. There are other institutional settings, and those are very, very expensive. This model allows those students to provide for them, but for them to take advantage, to use their intellect to get their degree. We've had well over 100 of those students now graduate, and they can go on and create family, contribute to community, be a viable part of society, and that's very gratifying. And then there are other things. There's some of the new buildings. Buildings are buildings, but we needed to do some stuff. We had not done anything in residential living in 50 years. To get that initiated, to get that moving forward, to actually see them come out of the ground and be there. And that's all part of the earlier Natasha question about being attractive. You've got to have places that students want to live and eat and to be competitive in the market today. So,
Natasha?
So that's all stuff that you do to draw students in, especially on a more local or regional level. Is that also how you're trying to draw international students in? How does WMU stay globally competitive?
I think first of all, thank you very much for the question, because one of the things I'm proud is that here's how we say this. When we welcome our international students, We want them to know they're going to get a great education, whether as a graduate student or an undergraduate at this university. We're committed to that. We've done that. We know what we're doing, and they're going to benefit from that. But we also want them to know that they are sharing their gifts with us, their language, their culture, their knowledge, who they are, our understanding of the world. And all of us need to really challenge ourselves to better understand the world and the peoples of the world and to be respectful of the peoples of the world. So if you're as like I was when many, many years ago, coming from a not a particularly diverse community, a small town, going to the university and doing the pots and pans, as I like to say, in the kitchen with a fellow from Syria who's my partner in doing the pots and pans, we started to talk about life in general, families, what interested him, what interested me, and that was very eye-opening. And so the goal here is to make sure that all of our students, our resident students, the students that come from Paw Paw as an example, that they have the opportunity to break bread with, to study with, to be close to and near to people from the world and to respect the peoples of the world and to help the people of the world understand and respect us, and that we are a global community, and that it's all about humanity, and it's about the humanity that we share. And boy, if there's a need for anything right now, it's for more of that. We just have to figure out better how to increase our civility, courtesy, and respect for all people.
There's also been an increase in minority student enrollment during your time. Of course, you know, Michigan has an amendment to the state constitution that says you can't base admission on race or gender. So what were the ways that you took the strategies that you had that you could boost enrollment and do it within the structure of the law?
Yeah, I think it had to do with a couple of things. One is what I mentioned earlier, the pride that we have in the university, the quality of the programs, our faculty are just outstanding in what we do here. So we can always lead with that. But then we could also lead with that we're a welcoming campus. And as a welcoming campus, that means that all of Michigan, in this example here with our underrepresented population, should feel welcome here and supported. And so we've really worked hard on that. And yes, we've doubled our what I would call our underrepresented populations, primarily in the African American and Hispanic, Latino, Latina community. We haven't done quite as well with the Native American community. That's still a challenge for us. We've always done well with the Asian community. But again, the goal is to make sure that people know that they are welcome here and are going to be supported. That's also true in programs related to our LGBT community, that this is a safe place. This is a place that says, look, we're going to make sure that you're treated well here, that you're respected and supported. And we're not into judgments on people's religious convictions or non-religious convictions. This is a welcoming campus.
And also one that you made sure was welcoming to veterans.
Absolutely. Our veterans, I just had a great experience the other day, a family a family that is not a family of lots of veterans. But their son is coming here because they believe that what we have done in recognizing and supporting our veterans is the kind of thing that we as people in the United States should be doing and doing even more. And so that was important on their list of places that they wanted their son to go. And, I'm very pleased about that. And there's always more to do. We're learning more each and every day. But to be able to support and provide for our veterans is very important.
What's the toughest decision you had to make over the last decade?
Oh, wow. To retire. Yeah, I played with that for a while in the sense of what was the right time and timing. But that's a really good question. And in some ways, I'll sort of compliment myself because I haven't really focused on what I would call the downside of the opportunity or the privilege of being here as president. You have to assume that that there are going to be some very difficult and challenging days. And at the same time, you hope that people will be fair and responsive. And I've always felt that I've been treated very well here and fairly. And so even difficult decisions, it's like a lot of the what I would call, what some people might say, and much of this conversation has been on things that maybe have been achieved during my time here. It's all about team. And so if you play that out, it's about a team effort in terms of making things better. But even in difficult decisions, you're never really alone. You have people you can consult with, and you've got to own that decision at some point. But you need to make sure that others have really been engaged in the process. I think some of the saddest days for me have been the loss of life, a tragic loss of life, whether through an accident or something that we're dealing with a lot of mental health issues today on our university campuses here and elsewhere. If we could fix that and solve that and make sure that all of our young people know that there are people out there that care about them, that want to help them and support them. And we'll never be their family and their mother or father, but man, we do care. And so those have been some challenging days.
On the subject of when to retire, as I was kind of looking back through the stories and times we've interviewed you, a couple things kind of leapt out to me and days that were certainly rather sad. When President Heneke passed away, we talked to him. When former President Elson Floyd passed away. And both of those, Dieter Heneke was 73, Elson Floyd was 59. Right. I don't think anyone was expecting either of those two, especially Elson Floyd was quite young, and Dieter Heneke seemed to be in good health at the time. Mm-hmm. And along the way, you also had a heart attack.
Right.
And I guess as I was thinking about all that, I kind of wondered about that decision to retire. None of us know how long we have, and we don't know how long we're going to be healthy enough to enjoy it. You've got family all over the country. Did any of that weigh on your mind as you were thinking about the right time to step down?
A little bit. It is true. In 2009, I had a couple stents, a heart episode. I also now wear a hearing aid. I had surgery on a knee. There have been other things that health related. But
feeling well now, though?
I feel well. Good. Right. Yeah. And have always felt well. I just have a genetic pool. I think more so from the standpoint of making sure I never wanted to feel that I was that my energy level in any way would slip to the detriment of the duty and the responsibility I have to serve as president. And so my goal was to always be at 100%. And if I ever felt like I wasn't quite at 100%, then I think there are others that should deserve the honor of serving as president of this university. So, I leave feeling good, and I intend fully to be on duty July 31. That's the only way, you go 100% up until the end, and then you say that's that, right?
Well, normally at the end of an interview, we simply say, that's that, and thank you for your time. But in this particular case, I think a little more needs to be said because our audience has heard from John Dunn more than any previous Western president. Mm-hmm. And frankly, that is because it's the way he wanted it. In 2010, President Dunn asked us about scheduling regular interviews about the university and higher education. He was the very first guest on this program, West Southwest, when we launched the program mm-hmm. in 2013. His willingness to come into our studio at least three or four times a year and more if events warranted really helped get this program started. President Dunn has made himself available to students, but also to the media and this radio station in particular, whenever the news was good or bad for the university. So I want to thank you very much for being generous with your time over the years and hope that you enjoy retirement. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you. Let me give a shout out to WMUK. I'm a faithful listener in the morning, and when I work out, I turn the radio on. And, I want all of our listeners to realize what a gem we have. And it does require some financial support, and the Dunns have been there. But please join with us in making sure we keep this radio station alive and well and healthy as it is. Yeah, thank you.
And we also want to thank Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Natasha Blakely.
Yeah, thank you guys very much for having me.
Natasha, thank you. It's nice to meet you, too. Thank you.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.